Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
When we talk about fresh expressions in England, sometimes they use the term FX, short for fresh expressions. So sometimes you'll see that, and you might wonder what it means. FX is simply fresh expressions. Okay, let me give you the background story to fresh expressions. When Rowan Williams became Archbishop round about the turn of the century, he was aware that there had been a previous decade, it was called the Decade of Evangelism in the 1990s, and a report had been issued which indicated that that was a complete failure. And it was a failure at all kinds of levels. We don't need to go into the detail, but he was aware of that as he was coming into his new role. It happened to be the case that one of his assistant bishops in the Diocese of Canterbury was Graham Cray, and Graham Cray is passionately committed to mission and evangelism. So Graham and Archbishop Rowan were good friends, and Rowan asked him, "What should we do?" Luckily, Graham Cray had been thinking of this, and he said, "What we need is the ability to have not church planting, but fresh expressions of church." And Rowan was immediately captivated by that idea. And he said, "What does that mean?" And fortunately, Graham had been thinking about what that might mean, and he pulled something out of his pocket and said, "This is what it could mean." And he described a process to him. Archbishop Rowan was in a position to finance that through those who were sympathetic to the cause, and through a number of Christian trusts, it was possible to provide £5 million sterling for the first 5 years or so. So it was really well financed to provide full-time staff and an infrastructure to make something happen. So that was kind of a little bit the background of the story. It got underway formally in 2003, and it's been running since that time. It was originally going to be 5 years, and then it was extended to 10 years, and now it's been extended again. So why did they call it fresh expression of church and not just church planting? The major reason is that the Church of England, by just the name will tell you something, the Church of England has a presence everywhere. So they have something like 16,000 churches. And I'm going to suggest that as I quote some of these figures, that Dietrich has very kindly volunteered to put some of these figures up on the board. So just thinking about what this looks like, if you think about England, not the United Kingdom, just England, we remove Wales and Scotland and Ireland and all these other strange places, just England, there are 56 million people living in England. 56 million, yeah. The Church of England has some 16,000 churches. Not parishes, because some parishes have more than one building, but 16,000 buildings or churches in the Church of England. That's an average, if you do your maths, of 3,500 people per church. So you could reasonably expect that there are enough churches if they were all effective to reach everybody. So it's difficult then to talk about church planting. Especially because here's some other figures which are perhaps unexpected. 85% of adults in the UK visit a Church of England during the course of any year for some reason. It might be that they just go in to have a time of quiet on their own and pray. It might be they go at Christmas time. It might be that they attend a funeral or a wedding, or they might go for some social occasion. But surprisingly, in any year, 85% of the population will actually be inside a building within the Church of England. That's a remarkable statistic. There are 44 million adults, that is, people above the age of 18 in England, and 3 million of them attend church at Christmas time. That's the Church of England, not any other church, just a Church of England, 3 million. 1.7 million attend a Church of England once a month, and 1 million typically are found weekly in services within the Church of England. So when the Church of England thinks about mission, it thinks about how to reach those people that it's already connected with more effectively. And that's why the term fresh expression seems to work better in an Anglican context than just church planting. It also works better because there is a need for what Rowan Williams calls a mixed economy. And what he means by that is that the Church of England sees mission much more widely than just what happens in their churches. A third of all the children aged between 5 and 11 attend a Church of England school, for example. Huge numbers of people attend cathedral worship, which is kind of outside of the normal parish structure. And interestingly, in the last 10 years, the number of people attending cathedral worship has doubled, exactly doubled. So the Church of England has a very wide view of what mission might look like. And therefore, because they want to encourage existing churches to flourish and other modes of mission to flourish, they speak about a mixed economy. And to talk about a fresh expression of church allows that mixed economy to also flourish. Fresh expressions suggest that the emphasis is all on local experiment. But interestingly, Graham Cray and those attached to fresh expressions realized that that wasn't going to be enough by itself. There was also a need for some change to the church structures nationally if local experiments were going to work. And there were two changes in particular that are important to mention. The first of those changes is that they had to change the canon law in terms of the power of priests or vicars. Because prior to fresh expressions, it was possible for a vicar to say, I don't want that expression of church in my parish. So they could veto whatever was proposed. So canon law was changed to stop that happening. So from now on, as long as the bishop agreed, it didn't matter what the parish priest said, an experiment could happen in his parish with or without his, or we can say now, her permission. Okay. The second change that they brought about was a new form of ministry. It's expensive to train Anglican clergy. And not only is expensive, but it takes a long time. And usually the people who become parish priests are not the kind of people you would use in an experiment. Okay, so they realized that they needed a new kind of minister, somebody who could be trained more quickly, somebody who could be brought in with a different skill mix, and who wouldn't have to take on board all of the responsibilities of parish ministry. So these are called pioneer ministers, and they have a completely different training scheme to bring them into the mix. Interestingly, some of these pioneer ministers are curiously becoming vicars anyway, or priests, but actually the intention is that they be an additional stream of ministers recognized within the Church of England. So these were important elements to make the Fresh Expressions process work. Okay, so what are the main elements then in the strategy? The first element is that in addition to training pioneer ministers, they also have a training scheme called mission-shaped ministry, which they use to try and expose as many priests and lay people in the Church of England to the core concepts of mission. So what does ministry look like that's shaped by mission? So literally tens of thousands of people have gone through these courses. They're just one-day courses where they try and expose as many people as possible to a different way of thinking, mission-shaped ministry courses. And by the way, you can just download the material for those courses from the internet. It's free. Secondly, they worked hard to create friends within the structures of the Church of England. We don't need to say too much about that, but they realized that they needed people who were going to be advocates for them within the very complicated structures of the Church of England. So that was a strategy. Thirdly, what they were trying to do was develop a sense of movement. And so they've worked hard on publicity, news releases, channels of communication, so that constantly people in the Church of England were hearing about Fresh Expressions. They were hearing about it from all sorts of sources, so they could hardly miss it. They were being bombarded by messages about Fresh Expressions. So they're developing this sense that something's happening. There's a movement going on here. They accompanied those kinds of messages with publications, particularly books, which dealt with some of the more significant theological, missiological themes. And the most important of those was their first publication, which was just called Fresh Expression of Church. But they then had all kinds of other documents that they followed that up with. And then, importantly, they accompanied all of this all the way through with research so that they could demonstrate what was or was not happening, so that nobody could argue. If there were results, if there were good results, they could demonstrate it. They had evidence for what was happening. So this was a strategy in order to make this have impact. I think the formal launch might have been 2004, but it was in that period. Okay. I don't think we'll go through this in detail, but I could let you have this if you wanted it. There were 10 criteria for what constituted a Fresh Expression, because one of the problems they had at the beginning was people realized that there was money attached to being a Fresh Expression. So therefore, if they had something existing that they could call a Fresh Expression and get money for it, they did it. So it kind of was a bit of a joke in the beginning. If it moves, it's a Fresh Expression. And then you attract funding. So they quickly realized that that wasn't going to work. So they came up with 10 criteria that would define a Fresh Expression. And the criteria listed here, you probably can't read them, but let me just give you a couple of them. First of all, it has to meet regularly. And secondly, it has to engage with non-churchgoers. So that's interesting. I guess another one that's important is the majority of members see it as their major expression of church. In other words, they're not doing this as well as going to church. This is their church. So there are actually 10 criteria, which you can have a look at later if you'd like to, or I can email to you for you to look at. So that was an important thing to make sure that they could describe it. Now, let me go to the key findings of the research. How many fresh expressions are there? Well, that's an interesting one. They're a bit reluctant to tell you. And the reason they're reluctant to tell you is that they haven't conducted research on everything. So they've conducted research in 10 dioceses, and there are 44 dioceses. I'm pretty certain that there's about 2,000 fresh expressions. And part of the reason I know that is because Graham Crowe has told me, unofficially. But part of the reason, you can work it out anyway, because they've conducted research in 10 dioceses amongst 477 or nearly 500 fresh expressions. So that's about a quarter of the diocese. So you just do the simple maths. It's about 2,000 fresh expressions, which is actually, in percentage terms, is a huge percentage. If you think they've got 16,000 churches already, within a short period of time to have 2,000 experiments is actually amazing. I'll say something else a bit later about the other denominations that are involved in this, but let's just stick with the Anglicans for the minute. They looked at, in some detail with research, at 477 fresh expressions in 10 dioceses. And what they began to discover was that actually there was a high evidence that there was genuine conversion growth going on. So in other words, typically the research showed 25% of people in a fresh expression were already Christians. That tended to be the core group they started with. Just under a third were people who were coming back to church. So they were the de-churched, but open de-churched. And then just under a half, and this is probably the most significant figure, just under a half had never been to church in their lives before. Now, that's an amazing figure. I think that even they were surprised by that. The research also shows that leadership is a key element in the success of a fresh expression. And by leadership, they mean certain kinds of qualities, certain kinds of skills, and certain kinds of intentions. So in other words, what they discovered is that good leaders are very explicit that they intend for this to grow. So the intention, the decision that something should grow and must grow, is actually part of good leadership. The other two bits, the skills and qualities, mostly relate to the ability of leaders to mobilize lay people. And the second area, which we haven't got time to go into, but it's quite an important area, what they discovered is that more than half of the fresh expressions, 52% to be exact, are led by lay people, not by clergy, not by pioneer ministers, not by clergy, but by lay people. So when we talk about leadership, we're not just talking about clergy, we're talking about lay leaders and professional leaders, paid leaders. Okay? I want to just describe to you a bit of research from one particular diocese. This is the Diocese of Leicester. And this is, I think, a very significant piece of research because I happen to know the Diocese of Leicester quite well because I spent some years living in that area. And it's a diocese which is unremarkable in every respect. So, you know, don't quote me on this, but it's probably one of the most boring dioceses in Britain.
And it's being
recorded. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's right. I'm not blowing anything up. I'm just saying it was boring. Now it might have changed. Maybe it's more exciting now. But actually, I think that's a good thing as a measure, because if you're measuring what's going on, you kind of want to measure the ordinary, don't you? You don't want to measure something like the Diocese of London, where there's so many people coming in from other cities, from other nations, from other continents. That makes it atypical. But I say that because the Leicester Diocese, I think, is actually a very typical kind of diocese within the Church of England. Now, here's what the detailed research showed, and I'm going to round the figures off a little bit just for your convenience. But in very rough terms, in the last year for which figures were available, the diocese, the churches within the diocese, grew by, or they added rather, they added 2,000 people to their total number of churches, okay? 2,000 people. Now, 1,000 of those people were completely new to church. And quite a few of them had come in through Fresh Expressions, because this was a diocese that took Fresh Expressions very seriously. 850 people was the net growth when you subtract people who had moved out of the diocese and who had the temerity to die. So the net growth was 850. Now you might say, well, 850 people, that's not going to write headlines. But actually stop and think about that for a minute. The Diocese of Leicester represents a population of 1 million people. There are 44 dioceses in England, and there's a population in England of 56 million. Just imagine you multiply 56 times 850. Okay, so there's 1 million people in the diocese. If it was typical of what was going on in the UK, you multiply that by 56. Actually, that's quite a significant figure. It's pretty much close to 50,000 people. Let's imagine you did that for 20 years. You're talking about 1 million people. So it might sound unremarkable in one way, but actually it's a very significant statistic, especially when you combine it with other things that are happening in the Church of England and in other denominations. Something stirring. If that can happen in a very ordinary diocese, then that's actually a very significant figure. It demonstrates that the slowing down of decline, which has been going on for some time, is probably now moving into an overall net growth in the UK. And that's a very significant development. So what are the transferable lessons? Well, I think they are these. First of all, there is a need for strategy. This didn't come about because somebody just started an experiment and saw how it went. This was very carefully thought through. There were a lot of elements in this strategy. There was the ability to resource the strategy. There was an awareness of what needed to be resourced. There was research built into it, as we've already indicated. So actually, when we go into the serious business of how we get denominations to grow, how we get groups of churches to turn around, we do need to think in terms of some kind of strategic plan. We might need to adapt it and adopt it and change it and so on and so forth as we go through. But we do need some strategic beginning. Secondly, in this particular case, and I think generally, we do have to think about the issue of resource. Very little gets accomplished with no resource at all. Now, how we develop that resource, we may have to be extremely creative about that. The Church of England is fortunate in being able to draw on wealthy individuals, trusts, the inherited money from the dead, and all kinds of other sources of income which aren't always available to newer outfits. But however we get the resources, whether we get it from overseas, whether we get it from entrepreneurial business schemes, or however we do it, we have to pay attention to the fact that we will need some resource. Thirdly, what comes through again and again and again in the reports is the importance of good leadership. And in this particular case, they obtained new kinds of leaders that they normally wouldn't have had access to through their pioneer leaders training program. Because the people that came on this training program would almost certainly never have made it into Anglican ministry. In fact, I'm pretty certain that they would never have made it through the first interview, because they were scary people for most churches. But actually, they were the right people for experimentation. So actually, just by virtue of looking for a different kind of leader, you suddenly have access to a whole set of leaders that normally wouldn't have been on your radar. You wouldn't even have imagined that these could be church leaders, because they're not typically what our filters are looking for. In fact, our filters filter these people out because they're not pastors and teachers. So intuitively, we'd normally filter them out, but actually, we're looking for a different kind of person. And, you know, what we discover as we look around churches in Europe is that there are many, many people who are gifted leaders who have been pushed to the margins of our churches because they are entrepreneurs, and they are deeply threatening to those who are in leadership. And it's a tragedy, actually, because they are our greatest asset and resource, and they're often sitting on the edges of churches wondering how they could be involved. Well, this is a great way to involve them. Fourthly, I hope I've indicated that research is incredibly important, and it needs to be built in from the very beginning, because if we don't build it in from the very beginning, what we discover is it's very hard subsequently to go back and find out what has really happened. So actually, to have people who are gifted in research and to begin to ask them from the very beginning, what kind of information would you need? How do we set up structures from the beginning so that you get a constant stream of the right information? That's something that we normally don't think about, because we're mainly thinking about evangelism mission. We're not normally thinking about the back end of things, the research, but actually it's good to be thinking about that from the very beginning. And training and recruitment is also vital. And the kind of training systems that we need are probably ones that don't currently exist. Now, in the European context, we're beginning to see some of these newer training systems start to emerge. I particularly enjoy the M4 training thing that Øyvind and the guys from Norway have initiated. But there are other similar kinds of mechanisms as well that are beginning to emerge. And the point about these is that they are flexible. They're designed for people who are going to train part-time. They're designed for people who are going to train on the job. They're designed to be led by those who are themselves practitioners, not by professors who haven't actually done church planting. So it's a different kind of training model. And wherever we look around the world and see church planting movements taking off in significant numbers, those are the kinds of training lessons. Sometimes we think, oh, well, that's all right for Africa and Asia, but for Europe it needs to be more sophisticated. It probably doesn't need to be more sophisticated, actually. Now, that's not to say that there isn't a role for other kinds of training. But look, let's be honest about it, folks. Most of our ministerial training, most of our clergy training is actually dedicated to producing theologians of the first order. There is a limit to how many theologians of the first order we need. And we probably don't need them in every church, actually, truthfully. We need practitioners in the churches. So we do have to look at our investment in theological education over a period of time. I'm not dismissing all theological education. I've got a PhD in theology from a recognized secular university, and I loved it. So I'm not opposed to good theological education. I personally enjoyed it. I personally benefited from it. But honestly, we don't all need theological education to that extent. But we do need something. But it's going to be very, very practical. We have to think about what we need to do with existing systems in order to give permission for these other systems to flourish. Whenever you talk about church planting in a European context, immediately the barriers go up because there is a fear that the existing churches are going to be starved of resource if resource is going into new church planting. The evidence would suggest that if we invest in church planting, first of all, it doesn't take resource from existing churches, it creates new resource. And secondly, the main beneficiaries of a growing network of churches are the existing churches. They're the main beneficiaries. It actually brings more resource into the system for all the churches. But here's the point, we're going to meet resistance. So we have to think from the very, very beginning, how are we going to overcome that resistance? Are there models that we can point to from other situations that would encourage the existing churches to think differently? Many, many times, most of our denominational systems in Europe, most of our denominational systems consist of networks of very small churches. And networks of very small churches are the ones that are most afraid of church planting, especially because we often think about church planting in terms of we're going to send out 50 people. And many of our networks of churches consist of churches that don't actually have 50 people. So they think, how are we going to do that? Well, we do it because we're going to be thinking completely differently. All right, let's just return to Fresh Expressions for a minute. The great thing about Fresh Expressions, from my perspective, is that it is ideally suited for all of the state church situations in Europe where church planting is difficult as language. So all of the Lutheran churches in particular, but also some of the Reformed churches in places like the Netherlands, this is language that is much easier for them to adopt. Is there a significant difference between Fresh Expression and church planting? No. And I sometimes have a little tussle with my good friend, Graham Cray. We've been friends for many, many years, well before he started with Fresh Expressions. And I always say to him something like this, well, of course, Graham, Fresh Expressions is another form of church planting. And then he says to me, no, Martin, church planting is another form of Fresh Expressions. Actually, when you look at the methodology, they are pretty much interchangeable. But the language is important in terms of the audience that you're working with. So when you're working with existing structures, when you're working especially with state churches that already feel they've got the ground covered, the language of Fresh Expression works much better than the language of church planting. Okay, I said I would mention a little bit about some of the other denominations that are working with Fresh Expressions. I'm going to mention two, although there are actually more than that in the UK context. The first I'm going to mention is the Church of Scotland. The Church of Scotland is just beginning to come on board with this, and it's too early to draw any conclusions, but they've got the benefit that the Church of England has already been working with this, so they can avoid some of the mistakes and learn from some of the wisdom. So I would expect the Church of Scotland to make significant progress with this in the near future. And I should perhaps say in passing that there's a very good possibility that some of the German Lutheran churches will pick up Fresh Expressions in a serious way quite soon. But the other situation I want to mention is the Methodist Church in England. Now, the Methodist Church is one of those churches which is in free fall in terms of decline. Thirty years ago, there were 8,000 congregations in the UK. Today, there are 4,000 congregations. So within 30 years, the number of congregations have halved. The majority of those...
4,000 congregations, but 16,000 church
buildings. Sorry, this 16,000 is the Anglicans. Okay, so we're now talking about Methodists. Okay, so there used to be 8,000 congregations, there are now 4,000 congregations. Of those 4,000 congregations, the majority have less than 25 people in worship. Okay, the majority. In other words, if nothing happens, the Methodists predict that within 10 years, the 4,000 will be 2,000, and within 20 to 30 years, there'll be very little left, even of those 2,000. It is remarkable. And actually, the sad, sad story of all this is, this is an example of how liberal scholarship has completely demolished one of our major denominations. I mean, it's just unbelievable, really. Fortunately, the despised minority within the Methodist Church, the evangelicals, are in the business of rebuilding the whole thing. And here's the remarkable thing. There are probably 4,000 Fresh Expressions of church within the Methodist Church. And just think about that for a minute. How many Anglican Fresh Expressions did I say? 2,000. And that's where it started. The Methodists only have 4,000 congregations, and yet they've managed to produce 4,000 Fresh Expressions. Guess where most of those 4,000 Fresh Expressions are coming from? They're coming from the evangelical section of the Methodist Church. Not entirely, but for the most part they are. Now here's the point about those 4,000. Those who are watching those 4,000 experiments would say something like this: probably only half of them will actually work. Maybe 2,000. But probably also those 2,000 Fresh Expressions that are going to work will be the new Methodist Church. It's actually remarkable to think that a whole denomination can be completely reinvented in this kind of way. And I think it's a testimony to the perseverance of a small number of people and also to the amazing creativity of God by His Holy Spirit, who's doing something remarkable, even with those who've been so disobedient.
Are we in question and answer time now?
As of now, yes. Okay.
Could you just describe one Fresh Expression?
Okay. You're talking about a group of people who are consciously attempting to reach people who do not currently attend church. And so they dream up, what could this be? So it could be a meeting on a Sunday morning, or it could be a meeting on a Saturday night, or a Friday night, or a Thursday night. It could be a meeting in someone's home. It could be a meeting in the current parish church at a different time. It could be a meeting in a pub. It could be anything. And that's the whole point about a Fresh Expression. You have a completely blank sheet on which to write. And the only limitation is your imagination combined with your knowledge of the group of people that you're trying to reach. What would be appropriate for that group of people that you're trying to reach? Let's go back to the criteria for a fresh expression. Okay. What is a fresh expression exactly is the question, and clarification, sub-question, is it a meeting? Okay. Here's the 10 commitments. The first one is this. It is something Christian and communal, new and further, not an existing group modified. Okay, so it's completely new. Secondly, it's trying to engage with those who don't attend church. Thirdly, it meets at least once a month. So it is a meeting, to answer your question. Fourthly, it has or is seeking a name to give it an identity. Five, it has an intention to be church, not just an evangelistic mechanism to bring people back to some other church. So that's 5 of the 10. You can read the rest later. But it gives you an idea. You are talking about an intentional group that has a distinct time when it meets. That might be once a week, it might be once every 2 weeks, but it's got to be at least once a month. They're not going to join the mother church. They are a distinct group. If it's a bridge to bring them back to the mother church, then it's not a fresh expression. Other requirement, and this is number 6, is they're welcomed by the bishop as part of the diocesan family, not necessarily the parish family. They're accountable to the bishop, not to their local clergy. Is there a reasonable accountability? Yes, there is. It's probably exercised at the time of baptism and confirmation. Yeah. Okay, so a long question about stats. Am I suggesting that the broader decline in the Church of England and more widely is being reversed? Yes, I am suggesting that. I mean, if I'm honest, you're mentioning Brierley, Peter Brierley's figures. I think Peter errs on the side of pessimism. Well, he is a statistician, but he's a statistician who has a particular approach to stats in terms of sampling, and then there are all sorts of projections built in. Now, you have to look at those assumptions in order to make a judgment about whether or not how accurate that is. We do have other mechanisms for collecting figures. I think there has been a significant slowing between 2005 and 2010, even on Peter's figures. But there's a lot of evidence to suggest that since 2010, the slowing has become either a complete leveling off or an actual growth. Not in every denomination. Absolutely, the Methodists are still in significant decline. The United Reformed Church is still in significant decline. Baptists probably are just about flattening out. But we're getting a lot of reports. I mean, I think the Anglican Church probably is just about growing overall. The Fresh Expressions claim to have added, in those 10 dioceses that were researched, they claim to have added 21,000 people to the life of the church, which is the equivalent of adding a whole diocese. So if you think about that, 10 dioceses have added the equivalent of another diocese in that period of time. It's quite amazing, actually. There's also reports, I mean, I know this. You didn't ask this exactly, but I am getting reports in the last 12 months from the Salvation Army, from the Nazarenes, from other denominations who are saying, we're actually growing. And that's reversed the decline. It's probably for the first time since about 1930. So it is a remarkable shift. And I think it's a further indication that in the culture more widely, there are a lot of reports that people are taking their general search for transcendence to the next level, i.e. they're seeking out answers about God by actually connecting with churches in all sorts of interesting ways. So I think there's been a remarkable shift, and I think it's gathering pace. Now, who knows whether it's going to continue? But I sense this is happening pretty widely across Northern Europe. not in the whole of Europe, but across Northern Europe, the culture that we were hearing about earlier this morning of me, myself, and I, the answers lie within. I think people know that this is an experiment that's failed. The question is, where do we find food now? And it's just fascinating because again and again and again, we're seeing that when people come across Christianity, they know so little about it. Their first response is, why didn't anybody tell me about this before? This is fantastic. Now, I agree with what you were saying earlier, that the journey in discipleship terms to move from, but I'm an individual, responsible for myself and accountable to nobody, to being a disciple of Jesus Christ is a massive journey. And so we're not just trying to make converts, we're trying to refound Western civilization, which is a big, big task. But we've had to do that before. You know, that is what happened in the Dark Ages when the monks came and found a warrior culture who were pagans. And what they had to do was refound the whole of Western society, which took 300 years. And it might take us 300 years in order to do that. Yeah. Okay, so two questions, if I could summarize. One is, how do we learn from the experiments? And secondly, what do some of those experiments look like? Fair summary? Okay. I think this is where the research has been so important. Because actually, not only are they doing research, but they're making sure that the research gets into significant digestible forms, and so it's out there. I mean, for example, one of the pieces in the research indicates that 66% of fresh expressions are continuing to grow, which is a fascinating piece. Another piece of information which I found interesting is that the average size of the fresh expressions so far is 44 people. So these aren't huge things, but on the other hand, 66% of those are continuing to grow, so who knows where they might grow to in time. So that's the first issue. How do we learn? I think by making sure that the research is well distributed. What do some of these look like? It's a difficult question to answer, except that the research would suggest that the overwhelming majority of these are not specific in age, they're all age focused. So that gives you a clue. Quite a high percentage of these are related to something called Messy Church. I don't know if you've come across Messy Church, but that's an attempt to start with children, and it's a kind of playgroup activity that then involves parents and relates that to a specific act of worship. So that gives you a bit of a feel for how that all-age thing is worked out. So, the remarkable thing about many of these experiments is that they kind of all do look a lot like church. in the sense that, guess what? We sing, we pray, we have some kind of sacramental ingredient, we have some kind of exposition of the word, however informal that might be. And that's kind of what you would expect in a way, that the inherited forms of Christian worship, in terms of their constituent elements, tend to be retained. It's how they're expressed, i.e., they're expressed freshly. But in terms of what they essentially are, they're still there. That's an extensive description. But what we're not talking about is, let's just go surfboarding with people and talk about Jesus. That's not a meeting. That's not a fresh expression of church.
Is anything you do new, some people are not going to feel comfortable with it.
So your point is that whatever you do, some people won't feel comfortable with it. Exactly why Rowan Williams has talked about the need for the mixed economy. The parish church will continue If you're not comfortable with the fresh expression, carry on going to the parish church. It's fine. It's not that fresh expressions is the future of the church and the parish church is written off. Not at all. They all have equal value within a mixed economy. So that's kind of the way the tension's handled. And the truth of the matter is, we all know that in many, many parish churches, actually it is a pretty small group that runs the show. And a pretty small group, in some of the worst cases, are really preventing people in the neighborhood from coming to know something about Jesus. And so fresh expression is a way of breaking through all of that and just breaking the situation open. Sorry, I've been a long time getting around to your question. Okay, so why wouldn't this approach work in the Roman Catholic Church? It would work in the Roman Catholic Church. Just the same as Alpha is working in the Roman Catholic Church. So yes, it can work in other contexts. Just to sort of pick up on one thing you said, you said that you're making the assumption that they are preaching for conversion. To be truthful, I'm not sure that is the paradigm they're working with. I'm not saying they object to conversion. We're all looking for conversion. The question is, how does conversion happen for those in late modernity? And probably the answer to that is that often conversion happens in the context of feeling a sense of connection and belonging to a community long before you come to faith. So it's
long before you believe.
Long before you believe. But then there's a context for exploring what that belonging and belief might look like. So, you know, all the people I know who are working Fresh Expressions do have the conviction that it's very important that people meet Jesus. In Anglican terminology, would these be evangelicals or Catholics, or are they coming from the liberal side? It's a curious thing because the majority of these things are clearly evangelicals. But there's an amazing number of Catholics and Anglo-Catholics and more liberal people involved. But it's strange how when you engage in this kind of way, because the thing is led more by lay people who have a belief, it kind of becomes evangelical despite the best efforts of clergy otherwise, you know. You can start a fresh expression of church in somebody else's parish. Whether that's a church plant or not is probably a matter of semantics. Okay, over here. What do they look like? Okay, to be honest, I couldn't give you a top 10 example, but these are not just social occasions. There is a worship element in this. So there is an expectation that the worship of God will take place. How that happens, it frequently is in a school, for example, where that's familiar territory for parents and children, and they will ask people to come to a meeting in a school. That's quite common. Of course, it's easy for the Church of England because they have so many church schools. So it's already easy for them to do that. My grandchildren go to such a church school, and the banner over the school as they come in is, "Every child matters to God." Well, that's a good start. it could even, I think a third of all the fresh expressions are actually in the existing church building, but at a different time. So it might be a more informal kind of worship in the church building at a different time. So the first question would be, for people who are not coming to church, is there a better time for them to worship than the times at which we worship already? So that could be a question. Sorry not to give more examples, but I don't have them to hand. Okay, so double-barrel question. Let's deal with the first part of the question first, which is, are there other kinds of research other than the Church of England. There is some research not as extensive. For example, the Salvation Army has been involved in Fresh Expressions, not to the same extent as the Anglicans, but there is some research available there. The Elam Pentecostals are in theory involved in Fresh Expressions, but in practice I don't think it's huge. If I'm really honest, coming to the second part of your question, how relevant is this for Southern Europe? To be really honest with you, I think Fresh Expressions is most relevant when it's dealing with state churches. I really do. Now, obviously, the Salvation Army is not a state church, so there are some lessons to be learned, but really the main lesson from that is simply, which could be taken and used by smaller Protestant churches in Southern Europe, experimentation is useful. That's a really useful discipline. So that would be the main lesson. Let's be open to experiment to see what God by the Holy Spirit might be doing. But I wouldn't take it too much further than that. As a complete system, it's most useful in state churches, honestly. Yeah. Okay, that's a very complicated question, but basically I think we could boil it down to what's the philosophy behind the connectedness or lack of connectedness of Fresh Expressions to the existing church? And it could be quite a complicated answer. What you're describing in your church, I would say missional communities are not Fresh Expressions of church. They are missional communities, and I think that's a different animal altogether. Second of all, I think that in some situations, definitely, it is a practical piece of politics to overcome the fact that some parishes have not been effective and are not open to new initiatives. So it is a piece of praxis, politics. And that's not negative, that's just reality. Second of all, those vicars, leaders, parishes who want to be strategic and intentional and realize that there are significant groups in their parish that they're not reaching, see this as a very important evangelistic mission tool to be able to extend the effectiveness of their church. So you get two kinds of approaches within the Church of England. Those who see it, those who embrace it and see the missional expression, the Fresh Expression, as legitimately part of the parish life, and those who see it as, well, actually, I can't stop it, but I'm not going to do much to help it, but it's happening anyway. But the other point about all of that is you have to remember that there are all sorts of other things going on in the Church of England. For example, there is church planting going on, which is much more like traditional church planting, especially around the Holy Trinity Brompton initiative, where they are taking existing existing buildings, I mean, and replanting into existing buildings. And because that's now extending far beyond the Diocese of London, so far in an experimental form, but possibly in a huge initiative, that has to be seen alongside Fresh Expressions. So again, we come back to it's all about the mixed economy. And it's just encouraging to see that the Church of England is so committed to mission that actually they're letting all sorts of things run which 30, 40 years ago would not have been a possibility. Now, let me just say, I didn't say this at the beginning, I am not an Anglican. Nor will I ever be an Anglican. But I'm kind of from a similar tradition to Baptists. But here's my point. We cannot win England without the Church of England. We can't win England with only the Church of England either. But isn't it great that we're in a situation where we can embrace these different traditions now and see how many people we can introduce to Jesus in the shortest possible amount of time? I think we're done. Thank you very much.
My friend.